Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month, we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at cmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at cmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening. Today, I just went back to Koan study. So we're looking at the secrets of the Blue Cliff record. We don't use this translation for actually working on koans, but the advantage of this particular book is it's got commentaries by Hakuin, who is the person who was regarded as the formulator of modern koan study, and also Tenkei Densong, who brought back koan study into the Soto school. You know, so that seems to be pretty appropriate to our own sort of mixed lineage that we have. So today I wanted to talk on case seven, and that is asking about Buddha. Okay, the introduction. The unvoiced statement is not transmitted, even by the sages. If you have never seen it personally, it's as if worlds away. Even if you discern it before it is voiced and cut off the tongues of everyone on earth, you are still not naturally quick. That is why it is said, even the sky cannot cover it, even the earth cannot support it, even space cannot contain it, even the sun and moon cannot illuminate it. When you are independently worthy of honor, there is no Buddha. Only then are you getting somewhere. If not, then penetrate through on the tip of a hair to release great illumination and be free and autonomous in all things. Then whatever comes to hand is it. But tell me, what do you attain to be so extraordinary? Does everybody understand? No one recognizes the sweating horses of the past. They only want to emphasize the achievements crowning the age. Setting aside the matter of the present for the moment, what about Secho's koan? Now, it's kind of interesting. That's a very long introduction. Now, you can see why he's done a long introduction. The main case, Echo asked Hogan. Echo asked the teacher, what is Buddha? Hogan said, you are Echo. The verse. In the river country, the spring wind hasn't stirred. Deep in the flowers, partridges are calling. When the waves at the triple floodgate are high, fish become dragons. Yet fools still scoop evening pond water. With this case, I've got to come back to, you know, when I was about 18 and 19, and I knew there was something that was intrinsically of great value in my own living, my own life. And so I started to look for, you know, various things that would raise this up in such a way that it would be beneficial to me and not harm the people around me. So I started to look around for all kinds of things. And during my life, really, I'd only read about Christianity and studied the Bible and stuff. And for some reason, for me, that didn't really reach that part, you know, that was always here with me as a human being, right from the beginning. You know, the part that doesn't seem to be touched by the joys and sorrows of the world, yet doesn't kind of push those away. So eventually I heard about Buddhism, and I didn't really know anything about it. I saw that it had a structure, it had precepts like the Ten Commandments, etc., that are very useful for people bonding with one another. It also had this thing called enlightenment, which was something that I guess I projected on it at that particular time. It seemed like a great thing to go on a quest about, and so then I heard about something a bit more similar than Buddhism, which was Jhana, and started to do the basics of that practice. And the basis of that practice was really being in many different forms. You know, obviously the form of Zazen was the easiest and the best thing to really develop that stillness, so that this more divine aspect could raise to the surface. I also, unfortunately, I read a lot about Buddhism, and you know, they had things like the 16 marks of Buddha or something. Oh no, or maybe it was 50, and none of those seemed to, you know, to really fit who I was. I mean, the guy looked Indian to start off with, and I'm not Indian. And then the second thing is he had a bump on his head up here, you know, and I mean, I had curly hair at the time, and, you know, so I kind of fit into that part. Golden colored skin is just like, no, I don't think so on that level. But it just went on in many different ways. So what tended to happen to me, there was then an outside Buddha that was there, who, you know, you could say was an archetype. But obviously with any archetype that we put out there, is that the most important thing is to see those archetypes or those elements that we really value in ourselves, so we're not always projecting on that, you know, on that outside archetype that is there. Some people actually never get past that. It's far more comfortable to project onto something else all of the values that you wish you had yourself. So a big part of Buddhism really is to shake off those externals that each of us as human beings tend to relate to in one way or another. It's like with all the bodhisattvas that we have in the Buddhist religion, is that they're just examples of ourselves in one way or another, things that we can aspire to, and also practice, so that they become a natural part of us as human beings. In this, it's nice in the introduction they put so much, or else there wouldn't be an awful lot to talk about in this particular koan. The first thing is that, you know, if this is not raised up, I'll get it correct. Because the unvoiced statement is not transmitted even to the sages. If you've never seen it personally, it's as if worlds away. If you don't bring it up, then usually it is not transmitted to somebody else. It's interesting just to look at your conversations with people that you have during the day. What is it that you bring up to raise up in terms of your expression with somebody else? You know, I remember I had a conversation with my son Nick, who's been going through some difficult times, and I was looking, the words that I say may not reach him, but it's the feeling that's the important thing, you know. And then just being there for somebody in whatever way is that there's a much better chance of you actually reaching them than not even bringing up the statement or whatever, even if it's a cliche to a certain degree, is that. He goes, even if you discern it before it is voiced and cut off the tongues of everyone on earth, you are still not naturally quick, you know. So do you match that? That's a really nice question. Do you really match that? Are you really reaching people? Because that's what it's about. Buddhism's about ending suffering. Unfortunately, there seems to be a lot right now in one way or another. But that's what it's reaching. It's not having a clever answer to somebody else's question. If it's just that much, it's just really not worth it. That's just on the level of philosophical debate. And words will not reach that. It's kind of interesting where in the verse where it says, when the waves at the triple gate are high, fish become dragons, yet fools still scoop for evening pond water. Now, this is kind of interesting because from what Hakuin says in it, and I see it slightly differently than he does, he's saying that if you just get caught up in the words on this, then you're just getting a little. But if you really own this aspect of Buddhahood, if it's really implicit in your own living, then there's no problem there. You're not looking for something that's external. You're not looking for a little of something, which we tend to do as human beings. Very rarely do we swallow the whole thing whole. Now, even if you look at say, your own negative aspects, you know, like greed, anger, and ignorance, to mention just three of thousands, you know, is that look at how deep those things are. You know, things like jealousy, anger, the red mist, all of those things that are extremely deep. Greed, when I really look at it, is that I want everything and I want it now. You know, it's not just a little bit. Well, I just, you know, I want to have a bit more steak there. You know, it's just that, no, I want everything. In that way, if I really open it up, I'm seeing as though everything is here, that's already actualized. But this is the vastness of our own mind that we don't really recognize. I remember when I was back in England, there was a guy that called himself Maitreya, and I was going, well, you know, that could be good or it could be bad. You know, the Maitreya is the Buddha that's going to come. Okay, but we're still waiting, and you know, and you may be waiting a long time, but at the same time, the arrogance in a statement like that, I am Maitreya. You know, so then that cuts it off for everybody else that comes a lot later down the road. But this word Buddha, it is so dangerous in many ways. You know, the good thing is that we translate Buddha into the one who is awakened. So where Eicho says, you know, what is Buddha? What is awakening? And then, so if you put it in those terms, then Hogan says you are Eicho. You know, again, is you don't need to put it into somebody else's name. You know, you are Galen, you are Bruce, you are such and such. You know, it doesn't matter what that name is. You are that thoroughly, and that's the most beautiful and direct part of this. Of this particular koan. But for some reason, and it's very strange for us as human beings, is that we love to project. So we'll hear a word and then we'll project it. Like somebody will say, well, what about patience? And then patience becomes something that's out there rather than a feeling that's going on. And then we begin to go compare ourselves with other people who are patient, etc., which is irrelevant, really, because you know, I have to develop patience for myself in my own way. I can't go, well, you know, they're a patient person, look at how they do it, so I'm a failure in that way. You know, as human beings, we're always looking for something else that is a benchmark. In this opening again, it's kind of interesting because he also says, let's see if I can find it. No one recognizes the sweating horses of the past. They only want to emphasize the achievement crowning the age. So quite often we put up our own standards. Now, the advantage of, say, a standard that we have is that it helps us to really awaken to whatever it is that's here. The disadvantage of a standard that we have is that we may make that standard unrealistic for that person. One of the unfortunate things we have as human beings is that we never met Shakyamuni and what he had. You know, unfortunately, many of the Central Asian and East Asian writings tend to glorify the teachers and not show the shadow side. In this country, again, we don't do that quite often. You know, now where it says they don't see the crowning achievement of these sweating horses that have come through. What do you do? I mean, the Buddha did a lot. If we just take it as this present moment, he did a lot as a human being. Now, so that sets the bar pretty high. In that way, he did a lot. Now, do we go, well, that's way beyond me, I'm not going to do it? Or do we look at it in a bit differently, in the sense of, well, I am going to give it my all in whatever way that I can, and at some point I will go beyond the ceiling that I've placed for myself, which happens for anyone that really practices intensely. You finally find you get out of your own box at some point. And that being yourself thoroughly really is actualized in that way. And we can't always, you know, rely on what we've done in the past. It's always here as our own life. You know, I remember, you know, Maizumi Roshi talking about the efforts of his teachers. He didn't talk about his own efforts that much. But the thing that he really emphasized was just really be yourself. Thoroughly. Don't put things on the outside. You know, be thoroughly responsible for who you are. And this is the true awakening that the Buddha is in that way. Is that, again, it's not the old dead dude from 2,500 years ago. And we all know that because he was like us in that way. He had a life. He had a lifespan of, you know, maybe 80 years or so. We don't know exactly. And in that, he appeared, as they say, he appeared as a human being, you know, like each one of us appears as a human being. You know, we do the best that we possibly can with who we are. But then, you know, he went through difficulties like we go through difficulties. So we can't even make excuses in that way for our own life in whatever way. You know, I remember in my early years of practice, I would keep getting disappointed because I couldn't go beyond the things that I'd set up until eventually it's just like, no, I'm a human being. I am fallible in that way, you know, and yet the universe always shows up on a momentary basis. And again, universe tends to be a, you know, too big a word, you know, my environment shows up on a momentary basis, whether I like it or not. No matter where I am in the world, is the universe still shows up. The world still shows up in that respect. And so Hogan, you know, he's asked by Echo, you know, what is Buddha? And he says, you are Echo. I mean, it's remarkable. You know, well, we it's good for us because, you know, this is all hindsight. He said that. Well, that's not so remarkable. But he just immediately went back and just go, you are Echo. You don't need this word called Buddha. You hear people like Rinzai would say, be yourself with nothing more to do. And then you are, you know, old Shakya in that way, is that if you really, really see that your life in itself, and when I say that, that's not the limited form of yourself. It's recognizing that this whole world practices along as you on a momentary basis, no matter what. And he brings it right back. It's one of the most direct statements I think I've ever heard. But then how does that function? You know, again, is if someone gets caught up in this word, Buddha, well, now I'm a Buddha, you know, so I'm done, my journey's done. Well, that's not the life of the Buddha. You know, the Buddha realized after 6 years of austerity, but then he still kept on teaching for 40 years, simply because he knew that this thing of suffering, whether it be human or it be caused by externals, is something that has to be dealt with. And having an equanimity in the midst of this is one of the most wonderful things that we have as human beings. You know, a different perspective is generated there. I'm alive and kicking, no matter what fills the space, no matter what fills the time in that respect. And again, it's like going back to the introduction goes like, when you are independently worthy of honor, there is no Buddha. Only then are you getting somewhere, you know? When you are independently worthy of honor, where there is no Buddha, only then are you getting somewhere. Well, what is honor to you? You know, this is a really good point. You know, some people think, well, it's you get a certificate, or you get a title, or you get praise at a dinner for everything that you've done, etc. All of these sweating horses from the past that have brought you to this point, all of that. You get an honor in that way. Well, this is not the honor that he's talking about. You know, this honor is a lot more simple, is that I am honored to be alive. The world shows up and honors my life on a momentary basis, whether I like it or not. The sky covers me. The earth supports my feet. There's all of this beauty, no matter where you are, as well as all kinds of other things as well. But we are honored by that on a daily basis. You know, can we really, if you see that honor, you don't need the badges. You don't need the recognition in that way, is that you see what you already have. And this is what the Buddha said, you know, wonder of wonders, I, all beings, the great earth, are the wisdom and virtue of the awakened one to thusness. So not only does he say, I am H-O here, he's going, everybody stands in that place right from the beginning. And so then we go back to that beginning statement where, let's see, go back to it. If you've never seen it personally, it is worlds away. This sense in ourselves that we want to return home. You know, this is the guiding energy that we have as human beings. I know that this mind can be laid to rest. This is the same as, say, Master Eckhart, who was the successor of Bodhidharma, where he goes to Bodhidharma and says, my mind is not at rest. Please pacify it for me. And Bodhidharma, the old pervert, goes, well, you know, bring me your mind and I will pacify it for you, which is impossible. So they say he went on, some people say it goes on for 7 days, but it could have been 8 years, they were saying, that he went on this odyssey of really looking for the mind. You know, is it under the pillow, you know, is it behind my head, is it hiding somewhere, you know, not that kind of thing. Part of this is allowing the mind to really settle. This is the beauty of Zazen, is that the mind can naturally settle. You don't have to think about sitting still. You begin to do that, and then the thought process of its own accord begins to settle. And then what happens is then the narrative begins to slow down, that we tell ourselves. And don't take this as something light. You know, we have developed a narrative over however long we have lived. So don't take that so lightly. And don't think it shouldn't be that way. It's going to be that way until it isn't. But one of the main things is just allowing that to settle, that thought process just to settle. And then the direct interaction with one's environment can really come in. You are whoever you are thoroughly. And it's not a matter of the narrative that overlays it over the top. The more you allow your body and mind just to really settle, then the easier it is to live. Because then we're getting so much feedback from what is around us. This last week, I was putting a roofing on top of my parents' house, and I was telling one of the guys that's working with me, he's going, "You've really got to work on concentration here because it's going to give you direct feedback from the rows of shingles that you're putting in, and so that concentration's just got to be there as you do it. Now, if you see this concentration and apply it and let it occur, then what happens is over a period of time is that then you're not run by the thought process into various realms that then take you away from actually doing whatever it is that you're doing. And then what happens then is that whatever you create becomes a lot more beautiful because you're in it. It's just appearing as something that is a manifestation of your own presence in whatever way. Or even it doesn't have to be your presence, it's presence in itself. And as we see, you know, when you see really wonderful pieces of art, like, you know, the Japanese have national treasures, that's people. And those national treasures basically have practiced their art for maybe 80 years. It's acknowledged, etc. But one of the things is they can use whatever material is there for the best possible use. And then because they put their own energy into it, that energy is really seen in whatever way. You know, I'm not saying that we should have national treasures, but it would be nice in certain ways, you know, to allow people to really pursue their own art in that respect. Let's see how we doing. We've got a little bit more time. So, you know, what is it really to be yourself in this process? And then the second part of that is, can you really escape what you already are? Can you do that? You know, quite often people will go, well, you know, I can't be a Buddha, I can't be awakened because there is a view of what that is. But there is an alternative that you can try, is wherever you stand, go, how can I escape this? How can I escape this? Master Hakuin said, if you want to escape the three worlds, past and present and future, where will you go? Where else is there? I mean, playing this game can be really helpful in terms of your own life, because there's always like there's a feeling that something is hidden, that this Buddha is hidden. It appears somewhere, because the way that the Buddha or Shakyamuni Siddhartha Gautama has been projected as been this person of perfection who lived a long time ago. And maybe that's not possible. But you really look at it from that perspective, how can I escape this? How else is this world going to appear than this? Because whenever I look, whenever I wake up in the morning, the world is always this way. No matter what I do, you know, is that this world is always here 24/7. You know, well, people say, well, it can't be. What about emptiness? Well, emptiness is this form in itself. It's this unfixedness that is always appearing as our ever-changing life, again, on a momentary basis. Just look and see. It's not we're looking for something fixed, that our lives are going to be predictable, they're going to be this way. But how can we be the container for all of these experiences that enter in, you know, day by day, moment by moment, you know. Can we really conform to circumstances in that respect? And then lose ourselves in whatever is being done, whatever is being taken care of. This is the activity of the Buddha that doesn't need the word Buddha. You know, the Buddha, you have to remember in his own language, it was Buddha, but the meaning was somebody who is awakened. You know, are you awake? You know, as we go back to Master Zwigen, are you awake? And if you are, then take on that responsibility. You know, living has some responsibility, obviously. You know, it's not like you should do something. Let your heart lead you. You know, I'll do this because I really want to do it. I see the benefit in it in that respect. And in that process, you know, recognize the efforts that the people of the past have done because it's been transmitted down to us today. But like for myself, I'm only as good as this moment in time. I can't drag my history with me in that way. But then how can you appreciate driving the car, talking with your family and friends, people who are, you know, maybe not so close to you, that are a bit threatening? How do you do this? And look at, say, how suffering arises in yourself and how can that be dealt with in whatever way. So at this point, I'd like to open it up for any questions or comments and we'll continue from there. Yeah, it looks like Pierre. Are you? Is that you? Hi.
Good morning. What Buddha discovered after his enlightenment was that life is suffering. And I was thinking, like, it is suffering because it's not primarily caused by you. It's other people inflicting suffering to you.
Well,
now
you have to remember that's. Oh, sorry. Go on. Carry on.
Freud has said that the neighbor is a chance for man to humiliate him. Steal his goods and all sorts of stuff, just like what is happening right now with Israel and Gaza. Yeah. There's always a victim there.
I'm not going to look at particularly about what the Buddha said in that way. And that's, you know, part of that is translation, which is one translation is there is the fact of suffering. So that's one, you know, it didn't necessarily say life is suffering. The second part is the implication was this one here is a stuck axle wheel, so something can be done about it. And the third implication is how it's used today, that dukkha, which is things are not going my way. So all of those elements are necessary to look at. The other thing through experience, from what I've realized, is that suffering doesn't have to be assigned to a person. If I feel it, then it can be dealt with. So if I feel that suffering, I can sympathize, I can communicate, I can do many things to ease that suffering. If someone's hungry, I can feed them, or I can give a gift. There's those things, but some suffering is just got to be worn out just through living, because those kind of suffering is a bit deeper. But looking into one's own nature, we can look at those aspects of, say, things are not going my way, and realize that they never do.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Oshie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Everybody's stoned.
Hey, Anya, you're on. Yeah, that was the longest space we've had. That's kind of nice. Carry on.
Chicken got to me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I had to jump in. Thank you for being there this morning, everybody. I'm very glad to be consciously considering this being, this state of being. You know, being the Buddha, it seems to me, being Etu, being Anyo,
yeah,
is awfully intimate.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And it is so hard to talk about because of that.
Yeah.
And it's so delicate.
Yeah.
And so it is just so momentary. It is perplexing, and I think that's what's leaving me tongue-tied.
It is. I mean, it's such, like you say, it's such an intimate statement. I mean, you've got to look at this in, like we look at the sweating horses of the past, you know, is, yeah, you have to look at Hogan, who went to see Jizo and asked him, you know, after he was asked, what is it? I go on, you know, I pilgrimage aimlessly. And what do you, I can't remember exactly, but he goes, not knowing is most intimate. And at that point, he really came in. But it's not, the thing is, it's not knowing something else. It's that, you know, I'm at home in my own skin. And that's the important thing. But what can you say about it? You've got to do something. I mean, the Buddha said, you know, this one here is a stuck axle wheel. That's the work. Then he also said, all beings are the wisdom and virtue of the awakened one to thusness. He said something, you know, and that's what reaches us today. You know, it's just like with the Christians that I know that are open, you know, they don't have a problem with Buddhism, etc. But it's just like there's the living Christ, which has got nothing to do with doctrine, dogma, or holding on to a set of beliefs. You know, and that's the same thing as I find myself. I'm not a Buddhist when I'm working and doing whatever it is that I'm doing. I'm exactly my environment. It's got nothing to do with it. You know? And so that's the important thing, is I can't sort of rely on something else. That reliance has got to be on this one here, whatever that is, at any given time.
Yeah.
And not the sweating horses of the past. Yeah. Yeah.
That phrase caught me so wonderfully well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so apt.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a lot of... I'm a very sweaty horse in my past.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, even that, that one, I think Hakuin says the general has to know the work of these sweating horses of the past, because you know how it comes to this.
Yeah.
And if you don't, how can you relate to people and how they are?
If you don't know the process of living.
Exactly. But it's not the most important thing. But again, is that we see that in our history is nowadays we go, well, we're the peak. You know, we have all of this, we've achieved all of this, rather than going, well, is this one settled? If this one's settled, then, yeah, rest on your laurels for a little bit, but there's still going to be a lot of work to do.
Every moment, every day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, and again, it's not necessarily work. I mean, horse likes, as far as I know, a horse likes to run. Maybe not carry people, but, you know, and that's it. It's just like, how do we naturally do that in a way that is true to ourselves? Rather than trying to fulfill something else, like Buddhism or, you know.
Yes. The first part of your talk was interesting in terms of standards. And
Yeah.
So I'll ponder that some more and think about that. That can be fairly perplexing too, in feeling if one feels that they have to live up to
standards.
Well, what am I doing right now then? Is this chopped liver and this right now?
Exactly. Yeah, I like chopped liver. It's good. So I mean, this is what 10K had to say about it. He goes, if you have eyes, look. If you have ears, listen. Is there any mystic principle of Buddhism herein? It's no more than you are you. I mean, he says it very directly. Right, you know, that's one of the things I like about Tekton. Yeah. And he says, if you want to practice, just make sure you don't eat through your nose. Which is fantastic. I love that one. And we know what happens when
you
do that.
Excuse me, I have to go blow my nose.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Alston, you're on. Or the new dog is on.
Dog.
Yeah.
You've got me thinking about suffering. You were talking about suffering.
Yeah. And
it just reminded me that I've had just my fair share of events, suffering in my life. And all of it is transitory.
Yeah.
It's really strange. It's not really bad things can happen, but then the suffering is transitory and it fades and I get used to it and I move on. And maybe sometimes I'll remember something that's painful and I can feel some of the pain again, but then that's transitory and that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. But those are things.
No matter what it is.
Yeah. And those things are important to realize, you know, because that's also a very basic Buddhist principle. Thought turns into emotion, emotion turns into thought, but you don't have to plug in. Because, you know, I'll see that, like, I say this over and over, but it's a good example. Is some mornings I feel like shit when I get up. But I know if I get up and get a cup of coffee, then that things are going to be okay. So I don't give it much value. I don't start going, making a story around it, which then makes it worse. And then it can be the other way around too. You know, it's just that I start thinking about somebody and something that happened and I feel in a certain way, you know, but I don't need to plug into that. But now it's kind of implicit. I don't have to plug into it, so I don't have to practice that. Now, as you go on with suffering, it's interesting, like at the core of suffering, it's empty. And then we go, But the thing is, you go into that, especially if it's really deep suffering, and there's some relief there in seeing that depth, which is at the base of every emotion and every feeling that we have as human beings. The other aspect of suffering, which you're also talking about, is just that fact that it's transitory. So I know that if I experience this and I put all my attention in this as being it, is I learn something that I can help other people. There's so much to it in that way. But, you know, the more that I go on is that I can't really assign it to something. If suffering's there, it's worthwhile looking into. And then as a group, as a world, is that we begin to deal with that rather than disown it and put it out there as something I don't want to go into. I want a different life, you know. That's never happened. I've never woken up and found myself, you know, I'm Jackie Onassis, you know, on the boat, you know, somewhere with people taking care of me and all that crap, you know, it doesn't happen. Never has. You know, it's not that I go, it never will. I don't know. You know, anything can happen in that respect. But this is the most important thing. How can I learn in the midst of this? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, and thanks for all the work that you do with that as well. Yeah. And your dog. Yeah. Okay. All right, Stefan, you're on.
Hi, Mercy.
Hey.
Nothing could be more solid.
Well, it's only a problem if it's a problem. It's only a problem if it's a problem.
If it's a problem.
Yeah, that's a delicate point.
That's the delicate. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, each one of us, you know, has got to see that for ourselves. You know.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, and also this is Hogan's subtlety. You know, his school of, but became his school of Buddhism. That was their mark. It was very subtle along those lines. But it's like in our own life too, you know, it's like if we're with people who are so-called successful, we might want to appear to be successful. And then we cover over something. You know, if we're with some people that, you know, are down on themselves, you know, we may want to commiserate in those ways, but we've got to be true to ourselves and where we actually stand. You know, it's like for myself, all the way through my practice, is I wouldn't buy into that thing about success or whatever. I remember during the EST years of the 80s, which became like the landmark organization. I don't know where it's standing now, but people would go, "Oh, don't you get it?" And I'd go, "No, I don't get it. Why? Because I've always felt there's nothing to get."
Right.
And so I had to be true to that. I can't fall into their scheme and not be true to myself by saying that. You know. Exactly. And then when I would deal with the teachers, this is what I'm working on. You know, yeah. Rather than, well, I understand everything. No. He said, I don't learn that way.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So, it, you know, if it's no problem, it's no problem.
Yeah.
If it is, it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. Hey, you're on, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your talk today. You know, and I was thinking when you talked today about the S people, and isn't that getting it their version of enlightenment?
No idea. Language. You have to ask them, you know. I mean, I can't say, you know.
Well, in terms of how you were expressing it when it happened to you, you're just saying, mm-hmm. No, I don't get it. But, oh, wait.
Well, no, I wasn't saying that way. I said, there's nothing for me to get. Life is like this, and it always has been this way. That there's a difference there. It wasn't that there was something missing that I needed to get. It was just like, there is nothing to get. Life is always here like this. So that was my statement, you know. And also, there's a bit of bloody-mindedness in it, too, is that I'm not going to follow their goddamn scheme, you know. you know, to appear to be a certain way. You know, I mean, luckily I've always had that part since I was a little kid, you know.
So in that sense, enlightenment is not something to be attained. It's just something to be realized.
Well, yeah.
We're back in language again.
Yeah, but again, you know, enlightenment means shedding light on, really. So that's a process. Mm-hmm. When you don't look at it, something, you don't see it. When you look at something, you see it. And in time is, you know, if you look at your own nature over a period of time, is that you see that it's always here. There's nothing else that could happen. So you can say that's enlightenment, but living still continues. So the work, that shedding of light still continues endlessly in that way on it.
So enlightenment is a process more than an attainment.
Well, you know, again, as you buy into what I'm saying there, see that for yourself in whatever way and express it in the way that you feel is true to you in that way. Because you have to remember is the Buddha didn't finish, which was what a lot of people did at that time. You know, they were, now I'm enlightened, I've become this, and I've got a thing that I can market and get food and a place to sleep and get credit, etc. He didn't do that. He just kept on living in the way that was true to himself and also shared so that people could really see who he was as a human being. Not they taught and that's all they did. Because for many people, I'm just a speaker on a screen, but I have 24/7 where I do things and people see me in all kinds of states. And for me, that's far more important because then they don't put me into well, he's this great, you know, whatever he's. No, they see when I'm angry. They see when I'm sad. They see when I'm tired, all of these things. And then they begin to see that they are that way too, in whatever way. And so it's more of a system in that way. It's not just saying some pretty words, you know, like, you know, it's like Jack White would say in I think dead leaves on the dirty ground or something. He says, every man with a microphone can tell you what he loves the most. It's that same thing. Is that anybody who's in a speaking position can speak, but is that really real and does it act on a momentary basis? That's what Buddhism is around, is so that's embodied. And then eventually there is nothing on the outside. Everything is included, no matter what we do as human beings.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. All right, Galen, you're on. Morning.
It makes me feel like a
Yeah.
And we finally don't forget it. Oh yeah, I think I do. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And that's true, you know, and it's you know, it's two-sided. There is that thing a lot of people say, well, you know, well, why don't I have it? Because, you know, it's just answering questions like that. And on one level, that's true. On the other level is that for most people, it takes a lot of effort to come to this point. You know? Yeah. And then, you know, if, like in what Hakuin says, you know, about the general in this thing is that the general has to know about about the sweating horses. Because if you try and use those horses, and they're exactly, you know, so this those things is that you should know what it takes to get to this point in time. But then don't hold on to it. You know, I mean, you know with sobriety what you've gone through to do that. And you don't poo-poo that. You know, you see the effort it took for you to go through and deal with that in that way. And also in many different parts of your life, you know, when you see people taking it lightly and go, well, I want that badge too, and they haven't done the work, is that they don't know the process. So how can they really help somebody else to bring it to the process, to this point, you know? So that's part of it, is know the process, fall over, get up, fall over, get up, et cetera, et cetera. And then you see people falling over, you can help them up because of what you've gone through. And it's that experience which is so important, you know. It's like I always say to people, you know, is that if you make mistakes, you know, the right way and the wrong way, not just the right way. You know, and the wrong way quite often is more helpful than the right way, you know. And, you know, I'm just there. Who really knows? You know, we just feel what's right and wrong in that respect. It's not like that's a one size fits all that reaches everybody. Thank you. Yeah, we're getting some nice periods of silence and settling here today. Okay, you're on. Can't really see you, but you're on. You got your hand up, muted. You got your raised hand. You can speak if you are, but you're muted. Oh, he's, yeah, all right. Ken. Hey. Yeah, can't hear you. All right. Well, I don't know, Ken. Can't answer your question, but can go back to silence. Okay, Andrew, then. Are you on? I can't. Can you come on, Andrew? You're muted. Ah, okay. There you go.
So sorry, I lost the buttons on my phone and I'm looking to show myself. But you can hear me okay?
Yeah, yeah. You okay. See both of you.
Good to see y'all. good to see you, and I miss you all. I went through EST when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
So I can give feedback from that standpoint. It was important intellectually for me to accept, you know, my past as part of who I was. It just had this feeling of being right. It made being right very important in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And finding practice feels like kind of the opposite of that. I don't know mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Thanks.
But thanks. You know, the thing is, I'm not saying that S was wrong. It helped a lot of people. It just didn't. There were certain things that it didn't work for me as a human being. I can't just take somebody's word for something. I've got to see it for myself. You know. Yeah. All right. Hey, Alston, you're back on? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Just
quickly, you were saying you learn more from mistakes. And I'm kind of I get interested in mathematics every once in a while. I was an English major in college, but I like math.
Mm-hmm.
In math, that so clearly demonstrated that you learn so much more by just knocking around with the stuff and making all of the mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So that then when you learn the thing, you learn it in this much more complete context.
Yeah.
Of why it works.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about math because I never played with it in that way, but, you know, definitely in music and with carpentry and stuff like that is that it just enhances my range, you know? That's what I can say about it.
Yeah.
No, it's good.
And I mean, the learning is so much deeper.
Yeah.
If you're just shown the one thing, okay, do it like this.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't learn it with the depth than if you make all the mistakes around this.
I agree with you. Yeah. And for me, it's, you know, in learning just about anything, I'm slow at learning, but then it clicks at some point, and then it's a lot, you know, then I know it, you know, it's in my bones at that point. So my learning experience tends to be a bit longer than a lot of people. But just for the same things that you're saying. Yeah.
Thanks.
You. Say, Joe, you're on. If you wish. Go on.
Thank you, Bruce. Yes. I just wondering, are there other people like me who don't know what X is? And is it worth asking? Do I need to?
I forget. It's an acronym. It was, you know, it's basically I don't know how you put it. It was like elements of psychological training along with, there was some Zen practice, because I think Werner Erhard, which I think is the E in Est, something training. So the S, I'm not quite sure. Somebody will tell me. And so you went through these processes that publicly with probably about, well, it could be, a, you know, 500 more people in a room. And it helped you get a lot more confidence in terms of speaking in front of people. And it worked on certain of your holdbacks were kind of addressed by doing things in public, you know.
Yeah.
It was, you know, for a lot of people, it was really useful, especially ones that were somewhat timid with dealing with the world, you know.
Yeah. Okay. In my time, I think there were things like Gestalt therapy where you
That kind of thing. Yeah, I did some of that.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah.
Ken's disappeared again. You had your hand up. All right. So he's disappeared again. All right. Let's call it a day. A day. Yeah. And anyway, it's open up. Opening up for any socializing at this point.